and the triple B but the information in the document that is within the AG report,
it's just too heavy. That we can engage, make meaningful engagement between now and 1 o'clock. We cannot do justice to this. So what we'll do, we'll listen to the presentation, ask questions of clarity and then close around 12 o'clock so that the committee can have its own meeting to look at committee administrative issues, minutes and way forward, actually. But what we're going to do, we will later send written to the department, so that next time when we meet, we will be getting those answers in writing, and they will be presented by the compensation fund. Our focus will strictly be on the compensation fund, not any other thing with those questions. And with this, this meeting is open, and those who have tried to join us for the first time today, it's necessary that we do our introductions. My name is Alec Nchaveleng. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Labour. I'll give over to other members to introduce themselves, and then the support staff that is here will introduce themselves, and then the department, in that order.
Thanks, Chairperson. My name is Adrian Williams. I'm an ANC member of the committee.
Morning. My name is Shelley Makubela. I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
I'm also a member of the committee. My name is Patrick.
Thank you, Jam. My name is Jam Topo Mutau. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Ashton Penenogo. I'm a coordinator.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, honourable members. My name is Nancy Lebuhoingos. I work for the Department of Labour. In this delegation today, I'm accompanied by some of our operatives from the compensation fund, as well as the head of the Department of Labour, specifically in the field of the IT environment under corporate services. They will introduce themselves. But could I also, in the meantime, send an apology for our commissioner who's held up in traffic and will be joining this meeting a bit late in the process. Can I ask that to introduce ourselves?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Thabo Fadi. I'm the CIO of the Department of Labour.
Good morning. My name is Lerato Mulirati. I am the Deputy Director General responsible for corporate services.
Good morning. My name is Vikas Sukhisan from the Compensation Fund.
Good morning. My name is Brian Lesnick from the Compensation Fund.
Good morning. My name is A.K. Pillay from the Compensation Fund.
Good morning. Peggy Madonna, the CFO of the Department of Labour.
Thank you very much. There's a lady, the journalist, who has asked to sit on the table so that she can use her laptop. I think we all know her. And I granted her to sit there. Lord is so Shailene next to you, she hasn't introduced herself. Can you introduce yourself, ma?
I prefer to remain anonymous.
Just tell us who you are. Yeah, that's better. You can't be anonymous in this meeting. No, you don't joke like that in my meeting. It's a very serious meeting. We've got some few apologies. The first one is from Butimanamela. He's stuck in traffic. He's on his way. And there's another, Mr. Van der Veste, Honorable Van der Veste is there. Who is you, Mr. Van der Veste? Will be joining us later. Are there other apologies? So there aren't no any other written apology.
Thanks, it's not such an apology, but Helen, as I was coming in, also informed me that there's traffic along on the N2, so I should think she caught up in the traffic. She will be joining us as she comes.
Thank you very much. Honorable Khadar, don't smile. What's my little and doing?
No, I just want to declare where Mr. Matimule is, because now it has rained in the book.
As I said, I would listen to the department, and then from the point of clarity, and then we move forward. DG, your team.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Firstly, could I ask if I could change my sitting position and sit next to Mr. Motano there so that I have a better left angle over the...
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
As long as you're not joining Mr. Motano,
that's a very interesting move, he goes right in your right, go left.
I think if I may remind the honourable members of nothing else but the pure and simple simplicity, don't cause any flaws. We seem to be having a problem with the projector. I because the presentation is not hung up there. If I could have an indication from the two gentlemen that are dealing with the computer there, what extent are they making progress? Okay. Now, but in the meantime, Honourable Chair, let me just say that the presentation that we want to make today pertaining to the compensation fund largely to deal with matters that have consistently been there bedeviling the work of the compensation fund as an entity. But also the second aspect would be what is it that they're trying to do to deal with specific matters and so forth. And I agree with the Honourable Chair that I think it would be an excellent idea if we would have at some point or another a dedicated sort of time, even if it would mean just a day, to deal, to get deeper into the details of particularly the AG findings, public protector findings, and many other findings that have been made about the fund. So what I'm trying to do is it now functional? Okay. The best enforced tonight and so on. The background is more to do with what the mandate of the fund is, and so I think we were all familiar with that. But I would like us to take off from slide number 5, which then deals with the question of audit findings. I'll try and basically summarize and compress the issue there. The compensation fund for a period of about 4 years has had serious challenges insofar as these are the age findings, by the way. For instance, in the area of revenue management and debtors claims as well as reconciliations for two consecutive years, 2008, 2009, 2010 financial years, we received disclaimers at that level. There was a little bit of progress insofar as the three areas. It's not as good progress, but it's progress in the sense that we received no longer the schema, but we received the 2010, 2011, 2011, 2012, and so on. Now, that in itself is indicative of a serious problem insofar as the asset, and I think also for 2012-13, we, of course, we could be faced with a similar situation like we had in 2008, 2009, and 2010, a financial year. But that's the state of the situation as the next lecture. Now, there are a number of issues that the AG made findings on, amongst others, were issues of other issues of leadership, for an example, and looking at issues of financial performance. You know, there were issues of systems that were raised, issues of skills that were raised, and so on. I wouldn't want to just go through point by point throughout those particular matters that were there. Next slide, please. I think that's also the other slide that still talks to the issue of the particularly financial and performance management issue. Now, yes, go ahead with that one. Now, there were, in large measure, most of the findings and challenges that have been cited in the compensation funds, they straddle over three broad areas. One, the organizational issues, some of them are more to do with business processes, some of them are more to do with the ICT environment. Now, in some kinds of organizational issues, they were talking about people and culture as you have it, and some of the points that have been made is that there's no common shared vision of the organization amongst ourselves as leadership. Business value chain is not adequately mapped out and understood by everyone. We do not have not clearly defined roles and responsibilities, lack of communication, business units functioning in silos and so on. Lack of training and change management. And so those are the people and organizational culture issues that have been cited over a period of time. Around business processes, for an example, and policies, is a question of fragmentation, and particularly insofar as business processes, yes, themselves, as well as lack of enforceable control. And that's the business sense. Now, the compensation fund itself is largely a paper-based organization, centralized and manually processing on in terms of its work claims and otherwise. And may I just say that, that some of the challenges that we're beginning to deal with at that level because of the clogged up in our systems and inefficiencies, I think that now we have got to deal with medical practitioners who are now refusing to treat cases of injuries on duty. So we have been also engaging with some stakeholders around that very same question to try and probably outline what it is that we're trying to do to deal with the question of inefficiencies there and so on. I think the last section, of course, is around ICT. Again, our systems are developed against qualifying the processes and requirements, your systems being used to process and take claims, systems are not necessarily user-friendly, system response times are too slow and causes delays in operations and so forth. And of course, generalizing the view also from the side of the compensation fund, such that CF systems are largely reliant on the Department of Labor the systems and the property arrangements. Next slide, please. I think I've spoken to this particular issue. Now, but some of the issues around change management, for an example, we have cited that there is lack of proper communication and consultation at level of the leadership and so on around issues of change. Decision making, necessarily, I think this point we should have put it differently, I suspect, because decision making rests at a particular level where decisions have got to be made. But we're talking about ownership of decisions in the organization. And then one point cited is that there is no buy-in into new initiatives, which is basically, and I think AG put it very well and said there is fear of change within the institution. Now, in terms of business capability challenges, I did say that you have your people, processes, and system kinds of issues. Now, may I just say that the flip side to this is that if you are to turn around the compensation fund, for an example, it means we would have to develop a model that seeks to integrate people and process issues and system issues into one in sort of the mode and model of doing things. That you do not deal with one component and not handle the others and therefore find the deficiencies in whatever that one is trying to do. Now, under people, by and large, these are also AG findings, as well as the other oversight structures that also make these kinds of findings. Lack of efficient performance management and monitoring, low skill level and insufficient training, lack of accountability by managers and supervisors, not service-oriented in culture and self-motivation, fear of change. I think that's the point that I also had made earlier on and so on. That's around people, and that's what defines the organizational culture as we speak. Around business processes, it's manually processing, centralized, as like we had alluded on, numerous unvalued and duplicated tasks, and so forth. Highly segmented areas of this talk to question of segregation and poor workflows and integration and that. And of course, in terms of how we're structured as a business, we're not necessarily structured for effective performance and so on. Around systems, again, you'll find that issues of systems and processes, there's also an interrelationship there. We're highly dependent on traditional manual processes, or paper-based and so forth, and that's also talk to the business process kind of issues. No reporting functionalities, a large reliance on service providers and stuff like that. In fact, I think on this point, the AG is somewhat is somewhat brutal because they seem to think that we have a multiplicity of what you call consultants and so forth within the fund. Excuse me. I need some water somewhere, but could I have the next slide in the meantime? Now. Thank you very much. Now, the question is, now that these matters have been brought to light, what is it that we are doing or seek to do as management, for example, in addressing ourselves to this particular matter? One matter is pretty clear, is that the fund can't continue to function in the manner in which it has over the past few years and so on, whether over the decade or so. Let's say it can no longer continue to afford to do so. What it means is that we need to begin to look into how do we introduce elements of efficiency in our system, and how do we structure the business in such a way that it has got to deliver on the stated objectives, the core mandate, and so forth. Okay. So, largely speaking, that's the outlook on our side to say these are the starting point is to agree that this thing can't continue to operate in the manner in which it has. Now, one intervention that we have made is that we have put together a project team. And that project team has had to look at what is it that needs to be done in developing and driving for a turnaround strategy for the organization. So that team is up and running and operational, largely is constituted by people who operate within the compensation fund. Terms of reference have been drawn up, particularly after the the workshop in management around the issues and what it is that needs to be tackled. Then it is expected that in the next few weeks we will then need to click in a process that has got to attract a competent service provider out there to come in and assist us in the development of a turnaround strategy. Now, we have defined that the overall character of a turnaround strategy has got to be an intersected approach between people, processes, and processes, and systems. In other words, we need a holistic turnaround strategy that has got to deal with most of these inefficiencies across the organization. Can I have your next slide, please? I think I've spoken about a workshop for management which was done in January this year. We've done the specifications, they've been drafted and so forth. In the next week, of course, we'll be going out on the specifications to attract the specialist, the turnaround organization, and so on. Thank you. Look, in the meantime, we are also seeing the need that there has got to be some immediate intervention, because in the field of IT, for an example, there will still this ongoing kind of challenges and so on. But the point is that we will still need to look at identification of the immediate interventions that would have to be made to assist us also. So in other words, we will not say, no, we'll have up and running here and perfect systems, what we have, a turnaround strategy in place and so on. They are a kind of measures that would have to be would need to be embarked upon. Central to this work that we have begun doing is the issue of stakeholder management and communication in general. So it is one recognized principle in around issues of turnaround, for an example in the organization, that fundamental inlet and essential ingredient is the question of communication, it's the question of stakeholder management. So we have started doing this. We met with the board of the fund together with the audit committee and together with the management just to take them on board in terms of where things are at and the direction that that we are taking. We also had a session with the unions, the labor, in the fund to also take them on board about this. We also have addressed general employees on within the compensation fund around some of the particular matters. As I had indicated earlier on that also had an occasion to meet with the medical practitioners, you know, some of them here in the Western Cape, some of them in KZN, and of course there are ongoing interactions between ourselves and them around the stance that they have taken, which is quite a threatening kind of stance to insofar as them refusing to treat workers who are injured on duty and so on. We have also looked into, we are also tapping into some testing, and we know that, for instance, the Road Accident Fund was one fund that was not actually doing well. At some point, if I'm not mistaken, subject to correction here, it is a fund that at one point was 42 billion in the red, but they were able to turn it around and pull it off from the red to what it is today. So I have also engaged with Dr. Watson, who's the Chief Executive Officer from the Road Accident Fund, and we have been loaned, if that is the correct English term, I'm not sure, but we have been loaned one particular a manager there to assist us from a technical advice point of view and also assisting us to understand some of the issues that they had to deal with in turning around the Road Accident Fund. I think the question of the operational plan and operational plans and so on, I think that has been developed and it's being implemented, and those are your focal points in terms of what actually needs to be done in that particular area. A communication strategy, I think that's the issue that I had spoken to in terms of in the context of stakeholder management, that in the process of turning around and developing the turnaround strategy for the fund, for example, we will endeavor to communicate largely, particularly with stakeholders, both internally and externally. Could I then ask through your chair that Mr. Sackerson takes us through the, I think those are two last slides, if I'm not mistaken, of this particular presentation.
Thank you, DG. Honorable Chairperson and members, I'm just going to go through the last two slides. The DG spoke to the current interventions that are taking place. Those that are short-term, those are the quick-win situations. The next two slides talk to the long-term strategic and operational interventions. Now, we need to look at the operational interventions because the fund is a going concern. It has to carry out business every day. So we've broken down what we've looked at, the strategic project and as well as the operational project. And I'm not going to go through in detail through the whole thing, but just to highlight some of the areas that are key to turning around the organization. The first one is to look at a business operating model that will define an optimal business operating model so that the organization can function most effectively and efficiently in delivering on its mandate and services to the South African public. The organizational strategy and structure needs to be looked at in terms to be able to support the new operating model. And that will give you skills, resources in the organization as well as to then effectively deliver on its mandate. One of the key areas in fund refers to fraud and risk management. We need to define a strategy in terms of that so that we can cut out the number of collusion and risk areas that are taking place in the fund, as well as then to look at how we can improve in service delivery in terms of having better and efficient controls in the organization. The DD spoke about the people as one of the business challenges in the organization, and we need to do a skills and audit assessment of the organization to determine that the people that we have and the positions that they are in are suited to the skill as well as the qualities that they have in terms of doing the functionalities and requirements of their jobs. Change management, the DG spoke largely to that, and that is critical in any change process to ensure that we have proper change management in the organization to bring people on board as well as to get buy-in and then to move forward together as an organization with all the stakeholders together. We need to finalize the revenue and debt management strategy. That to some extent is already there, but needs to be improved and updated so that we can address the issues around income and make the fund sustainable from a financial perspective. And lastly, to develop and implement an IT strategy and modernization based and aligned to what the bigger picture is in terms of the departmental strategy. The next slide speaks to how we look at the fund going forward. How should the fund be in terms of operating? And that is looking at the value chain of the organization. And there are three key areas in terms of value chain. It's bringing in the revenue management, the money in and money out process, the claims management, getting the claims, accepting, adjudicating and paying claims, and then of course look at one key area that we haven't been focusing on in terms of as a fund, in terms of rehabilitation management. When an employee gets injured, the process is just to pay the medical account, that's it. But we need to look at moving forward in terms of case management, managing that so that we can put the injured person back into an employment so that they become sustainable as an individual as well. So those key areas, the revenue management is underpinned by investments, registration and submission of declarations by employers. Claims management talks to claims coming in, being registered, processed, adjudicated, paying out to recipients timely as well as correct amounts. And the case management that I spoke to around rehabilitation. Pension also looks at longer term financial sustainability to the injured and person who has a disease, the change in the environment of work. And then I spoke to the rehabilitation, but as well as coupled with that is the case management. It looks at monitoring progress, looks at how we can reintegrate people into working jobs, and also look at provision of assistive devices like prosthetics, and then reporting on this. So aligned to that is, of course, risk management and governance that will form the compliance and controls and ensuring that the fund is functioning effectively. And then underpinning that is all the support services of the organization, like the HR functions, human resource functions, finance, supply chain, information technology, and then any legal aspects surrounding that.
The last slide, Chair, is we're just simply emphasizing on one point here and on perhaps on some of the points around the question of what are the necessary sort of dependencies or ingredients for a success, for this approach to be a successful one. We think that the project has got to be owned, the reporting, you know, cost reporting has got to be quite regular, and it has got to be owned at the level of the Director General. That the project in that today, in fact, of course, will continue to play its role in a form that is quite dedicated to ensuring that we are successful in ensuring the development of the turnaround strategy. We will attract external expertise for the work around the project team and the overall working expertise there around the turnaround strategy itself. Communication and interactions with all stakeholders is going to be extremely necessary. You have had a number of different levels of frustrations from service providers about our work here within the fund. Either we do not pay them on time, and therefore there will be all sorts of forms of complaints that come across, including, by the way, litigation, you know, wrangling ups and downs in courts and stuff like that. That has got to stop. It has got to, you know, to eliminate that, amongst others. We will need to show on the issue of the governance processes also as and when this work begins to unfold. And that the issue of change and change management, it's one thing that we should not lose sight of. Because what we can choose to do, we can choose to think that the major problem are systems and focus on systems, but then do not focus on the people factor, for an example. And that in itself would create a stumbling block to the actual successful implementation of a turnaround strategy. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, DG, and thanks for the compensation. In your opening remarks, DG, you talked about the public protector's findings. I'm hearing for the first time that there is a report from the public protector. I think we should be safe with a copy of that report. I've checked with with the AG's office. I think they were waiting for the same report, or they did not get it. I don't really understand what is happening. So let's favor us with that report, and it will help us when we. It will be more useful to us when we do the question. Next, are there issues that members would like to raise on? Honorable Williams, Honorable Khanare, and Honorable Vindagor.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to refer firstly to slide 6. It talks about the audit outcomes from 2008 until 2012. So it goes disclaimer 2008-09, 2009-10 and disclaimer, then there's some improvement, 2010-11 qualification, 2011-12 another qualification, and then the DG said to us that it's perhaps going to go back to a disclaimer. I want to know, you've got the turnaround strategy. Knowing the past of the organization and how quickly you can regress again, do you have mechanisms within the turnaround strategy to prevent a regression? And my second point is, As a committee, I think we need regular updates on the implementation of this turnaround strategy due to the fact that we've seen that there has been regression in the past. And, you know, it would be terrible again to come back next year and say, oh, well, you know, it didn't work. So we'd like regular updates, please. Thank you.
Thank you. The issues I'm going to raise is not going to be slide by slide, but it's going to be issues as the presentation was made. Because one of the findings was that there is an excessive use of consultants, and I can't pick it up from your presentation about how is that going to be dealt with to ensure that the department does what the people employed by the conservation fund do what they are employed for, instead of getting other people to come and do the job which they have been employed to do. The issue of manual processing, I think when we were in KwaZulu-Natal, it came out very clear that there was a problem where it takes 1 to 2 years for registration, employer registration to take place because of your systems, the systems within the conservation fund. And it's not very clear about how does this get linked. I mean, in terms of all the money spent on IT, this problem is not supposed to be there. But it's not very clear about when we talk about provision of assistive devices, whether these assistive devices are going to be able to deal with this particular problem of the manual processing, which also has to deal with the centralized processing. The organization has been centralized the processing because I think in KwaZulu-Natal, where we were, it has got nothing to do with this, but where we were, the information we got is that at one river center, they could register faster because they had the ability to process. And this dedicated project team, which has been appointed, are they going to be integrated in the department, or they are going to work, and then when they finish, they go, and then are they part of the compensation fund, or is people who are coming from outside doing the job, and when they leave, there is a vacuum? And the last thing, which was something which I raised with the chair, I met one, with the issue of payment to service provider. I met one physiotherapist in Adelaide in December, and I told the chair about that. That physiotherapist was not being paid. And all of a sudden, he got a call from compensation fund, and they were saying, look, we can see that we owe you a lot of money, but we can facilitate this if we get something else. You know, maybe the problem is not the system. It's the people who believe that the more they pile up what they owe the people, it becomes easier for them to be paid. So in terms of your risk management, how do you take out individuals like that who sit with piles of payment due to doctors and physiotherapists, and try to talk to them to say, if you promise to give me something, I'll facilitate your payment. Thanks.
Honorable Mudau.
Thank you, Chair. The year is about to end. It's just started, but it's about to end, and I'm sitting here thinking, I've been there before, been here before. Why was it sounds like I've been here before? Is that word turnaround strategy? I mean, the thing is, my head's spinning. Seriously, Chair. But let me just cut to the chase. The DG made a very profound statement, and that's what bothers me. He says, the matter that he's raising now are not new. They've been bedeviling the compensation fund for a long time. And of course, we see from the schematic there. So if that is the case, what has been done over all these years? Let's take the last 4 years to turn around the company. This. So I sit here and I think of the compensation fund, and I get a picture of this highly dysfunctional organization right now. And I'm actually surprised that it still does some work. When I first came to the committee, I took the trouble of going to the compensation fund offices to see how they work. I saw the files. It's mind-boggling. So, Chair, I would like to associate myself with the pleas made by my two colleagues who have spoken. The first one is this pro- project team needs to come to this committee in 3 months' time to tell us exactly what it is they're going to be doing. I need to hear numbers. I need to hear what has been done to the people who are corrupt. It's not me saying this is the AGC here. There is corruption. People are stealing. People are doing all sorts of funny things. We need numbers. We need to know what has happened to these people. We need to know that we, as the representatives of the people, can account for what is being done or not being done in the name of the people. The compensation fund is a very, very important instrument in the scheme of things. In my office, we have a dedicated person who merely deals with compensation fund problems, UIF problems. That's all they do. That's their job. And the reason we have that person is because the compensation fund and the UIF are failing in many ways. We don't need that. We shouldn't be having that. So it's a plea from the heart, Chair, that I have this nightmarish feeling that if I am lucky enough to come back to Parliament after the election, next year, this time I'll be sitting, after the election, in a year's time I'll be sitting listening to this kind of story again, that we're trying to turn around the compensation fund and we're having problems of this nature. Chair, this is a really heartfelt plea. We need to do something about this.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. On this one, I just need to be given an indication, a signal as to when quickly can we see development on this one. On majority cases, in labor centers where we went for oversight, right, we've come to realize the buildings in majority cases are not conducive for the work which is being expected to be done on the centers. The last center I went to yesterday was in Polokwane, one of the biggest in that province. Almost half of the staff was on sick because of the congestion. When quickly can you meet with Public Works to address some of these questions with regard to the buildings, because the conditions are just unbearable.
There are really a lot of issues that are worrying me from where I am now. There are issues of accuracy, of the accuracy of the documents we receive in the court. I think it's problematic for me. The revenue contributions, assessment of debtors, and many others. The AG says that information is not accurate. People are questioning the accuracy of the figures we have. And here we are talking a lot of money, 4.9 billion revenue contribution, 5.7 billion rand of valuation of the assessment data. And what again? I mean, there's actually a lot that, I mean, this is seriously worrying. How much money do we have in our coffers? And how many people do we owe in relation to it? Can we still float if we are to pay everybody that we owe? Do we know how many people we owe and how much against what we have? I think that's a... Honorable Nyekimba, you end up.
Thank you, sir. I think speakers before me spoke to the turnaround strategy. You see, the CDH practicalizing turning around, turn around, turn around, turn around. You get dizzy as fast. not doing anything because you are turning around. I'm raising this chair. There has been a turnaround strategy since I came to Parliament in 2009. I came after the appointment of the Conversation Fund Commissioner. And what was said even then is that his appointment to be Commissioner in the Conversation Fund is to rectify what is wrong in the fund. Now, we are still busy with another turnaround strategy. What happened to the previous one? Because the reality is that we can't even every time. There are always new turnaround strategies. And I think the DG made mention that there's apart from the product team, there's a service provider or consultant or whatever the department is looking at employing services of that. Now, there were such, in fact, there was a time where RAND Mutual Assurance was used by the Conversation Fund in order to deal in particular with the area of payment. And at a particular time, it was then said, no, we are no longer going to use the RAND Mutual Assurance. In fact, RAND Mutual Assurance is what is used in the mining industry. And in doing that, the Conversation Fund wanted to deal with its own systems, which cannot meet the mandate of the department. Now, I'm hearing that you are intending to use road accident fund expenses. I mean, how long are we going to keep on changing? We take this one, it works with us, we change, we take another one. Because from where I'm sitting, if that's the way that we're going to do DG, we will sit with these problems in the Conversation Fund forever. Because, for instance, in the current year review, in relation to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we're talking about big figures here, more than 12 million. You compare with previous financial year, which it was at the rate of 2 million. Now, if you look at the increase in the amount on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it's an increase, we're talking about 10 million rand. Now, the reality is that it's like this, we are not necessarily moving forward to dealing with the problems in this public entity, in the main. There was a time when we even said, DG, let the Conversation Fund work very close with the UIF, looking at the systems and how UIF is operating. Yes, it's different entities. But in terms of how to do the actual work that is required by the public entity, it can copy from what UIF is doing. But that is not happening. The issue of the skills audit, if you look at the archives, it's an issue that has been dealt with since I came to Parliament in 2009. People were there employed on temporal basis to deal with backlog. There has been skills audit since then. Even now and moving forward, we will continue with skills audit. Now, I don't know, maybe it will be skills audit of the people who have been taken on board now. You are not referring to others. In the night, the point I'm raising, DG, here is I'm not too sure whether the project team will in the night, deal with the challenges that has been faced by the public entity. Thank you, sir.
I think I want to know, Dicky, in the compensation fund, how many functions have we outsourced? And they were outsourced to who? And for how long? And at what cost to the compensation fund? And what's the performance against the contract? If there is any between you and your service providers. We actually want to see if they are adding value to us. There was a hand here. Honorable Funder Vesdaven, maybe, and Honorable Makubela Marshall, and then we can give over to the DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. What I find most disturbing, and I fully agree with what has been said or actually asked earlier, is the fact that the compensation fund was dealt with about 1,500 claims per day. I think that is the figure. It has dropped to about 1,000 claims per day in the 2011-2012 year. It's about a two-thirds of the number of claims that were dealt with in previous years, which just seemed to me to say that, you know, this fund is imploding. It is really as if the ability to deal with claims has either disappeared or people no longer submit claims at all to this fund because they've given up on the fund. And this, when the fund is sitting with 14 billion, etc., is to me most disturbing. And I wonder what the department's explanation is when for the previous 5 years, we've every year had more than 330,000 and more claims per annum, where they've paid out up to 800 million per annum, and then in the last year suddenly just 550 million rand in claims. It really is disturbing in a time where the industry should be growing and where we know inflation is and medical costs particularly rising by levels far higher than the inflation rate.
Hello.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, when I hear the word new project team for the compensation, new turnaround strategy, because I would want to believe that the old turnaround strategy is no longer there, there's a new one now. I'm thinking deviation from normal procedures, because somewhere, somehow, the compensation will have to cover the cost of these new turnaround strategies, bringing new expertise on technical or to technically advise compensation fund. What I want to know is how much will be used to cover the cost of these turnaround strategies and bring out expertise to come into the compensation and try to turn things. Because I'm asking this because, you know, we've been through this. We've been through rent mutual assurance, and funds were used to cover those costs. Right now we are talking about bringing other people to try and still turn around or find something that would work for the compensation fund. But in this process, you know, when we as members of parliament sit here and you are telling us what you think would work for the compensation, yes, we want the compensation fund to work. And we tend not to look at the other side where you would have to go deviate from your own normal funding processes to cover this cost. And that's where at times monies get used in an appropriate manner, I would want to use the word. Because at times we saw when Accenture came in, a lot of money was used, because that's consulting And right now you'd want to bring other projects, other project teams to help the maybe the very same team within a compensation bank. Just tell us, DG and the commissioner, how much do you estimate would be used to cover this cost towards your turnaround strategy? Thank you.
Over to you, DG. No, thanks very much, Chair, and thanks very much for the questions and some of them that are easily convertible into inputs in terms of how what other considerations can then be taken into account in this kind of work that we're doing. Maybe let me try and start with the order of the interventions that have been made, and of course I would also through you, Chair, ask where appropriate also some of the people in the delegation to also respond in terms of some detail in respect of certain questions. Now, with regards to the findings by public protector, we are talking about, I think it's a report released by Advocate Mushwana, who was the public protector in 2009. And surely that report is public. In other words, it can be accessed and so on. So in terms of, honoring members of the core of the report, I think that really should not be a problem. The specific kind of issues that we made. And subsequently, Advocate Madonsela also, I think, was it November or December, Commissioner, when we met with her, I don't know, somewhere, also was making a follow-up around those particular matters, including other matters that had been brought to the attention of the current public protector and so on. So that is not a problem. After addressing the employees at the compensation fund on Monday, I think it was Monday, one of the employees walked up to me and said, I don't even know the name of this person, but he said to me, we are somewhat hopeful about this approach that we are taking. Because here in the compensation fund and in the Department of Labor, it will be for the first time that we have a hands-on approach by Director General insofar as the turnaround strategy is concerned. Most of the time, these things have always been crafted and validated and so forth in non-formal land. Now, that was the view of this particular MP. I'm not saying it's correct, but I'm saying that was the view, and for me it was an interesting view, and I think it then began to emphasize one particular point, and that point is for any turnaround strategy and change management process to be successful, you require a leadership ownership on that. If you would take the amount of the challenges that are there in the fund, I don't see how an accounting office of the Department of Labor cannot take a full responsibility, full charge of this thing. I don't see how. And of course, I'm not going to be in a position, honorable member, to reflect on what must have happened in the past and so on. Can you just go back to the 4 years, the slide that shows the 4 year thing, disclaimer, and whatever? Then. Now, I know that, for instance, I need to be very careful in terms of how I put this thing across. The Director General with whom we are posing these questions to came in the third year, May 2011. So in essence, what he does, he appears here over an assessment of one financial year of his existence within the department. And what he says, look, this has been the trend. This is what has been happening. And therefore, what has been happening still happens now. And therefore something needs to be done. And I do think that, Honorable Chair, perhaps what we should try and guard against generally our management, everybody else content with the building of the fund, is despondency. is honestly in a sense that, you know, I think it's a different process to evaluate as to what the other interventions were, the person who made them and why didn't they succeed or why did they succeed. And so I think it's a different exercise altogether. But the question is that here we are in a house that is burning. So we are not going to say that not because there is somebody else, the ones trying to the fire extinguisher and this fire didn't go out and therefore it's fine, let it continue burning. I don't think it should be a correct approach altogether. In fact, I think one of the points that you're making around the issue of the turnaround, they actually effectively motivate the case as to why we need to do this kind of work. And one of the things that I forgot the chair to also mention, alongside this work, we're also instituting a forensic investigation into the affairs of the fund. Because the point is, if you have all the particular problems as they have been cited, one of the fundamental questions that needs to be asked is what is the extent of the problem? So the problem is identified, but what is the extent of the problem? So that if indeed you have got to deal with the issues there, you take into account the quote-unquote deep-seatedness of the problem and and so on. So I apologize that I didn't mention that thing, but that's also the work that we're also commissioning, starting to do, to say, no, there has got to be a forensic investigation into the work of the Compensation Act. Now, and therefore, when we do a forensic investigation, I think the point that was raised by Honorable Khanari or the excessive use of consultants, in fact, it's not even your point, it's a point by the AG. I think you're citing that particular point. In the focal areas of what a forensic investigation must be able to achieve is also exactly this point, issues of contract management, evaluating those contracts, and who's who in that particular environment. Even value for money, for an example, is what needs to be interrogated during the course of the forensic investigative exercise. So that issue will be satisfied from a purely scientific point of view. You know, who are the people that you meet there, and why, and perhaps how much value for money to be derived around the engaging. Some of the people that we have there. Now, and I think honorable member who raised the question about regression and implementation of the technology, the reason why I was citing the issue of what this other employee from the fund said is precisely because I think I was trying to deal with the question of, you know, how do we ensure that we do not have regression? How do we ensure that indeed, once we have a turnaround strategy in place, you implement it, and so forth. And I'm saying all you need, you require the involvement of leadership at a macro level to ensure the actual execution and implementation of such. Now, maybe let me clarify something about the issue of the project team. The project team as we have it is an internal exercise. In other words, it's people who operate within various sort of divisions in the fund, for example, people who know the environment. And their task is simple, and I think that task is obvious, it's almost finished, actually. But their task is simple, was to say, what is, let's skin as broadly speaking as to what is this work that needs to be done, but also how this work has got to be done. But not realizing that it's the work that can't be done by ourselves. It's the work that requires the expertise and technical expertise out there to come and do that work. They have delivered on the issue of drawing up the terms of reference, for an example, for a turnaround specialist and so forth. So it's an internal exercise, the question of setting up the project team itself and so on, which has happened and stuff like that. I think on the question of what has happened to the previous one, what has happened to to what has been done over this. It is a concerning thing. That even these, there were measures before, but you know, those measures did not actually necessarily come to fruition and so forth. And all that I can ask of this particular committee is that we can only be judged on the basis of the work that we do now. We can't judge by actions of other people that were there before. So I think that would actually be unfair. I think let us accept the fact that we have these kind of problems. We wanted these problems to go away years ago, whenever it was, but they never went away and are still actually with us and so on. And of course, we could have easily, elected not to do anything. If these problems have been there, they've been there. You just shoved your head into the sand and not see the problem. We could have very easily done that and so forth. But it is not a responsible thing to do that. The challenge is there, and the challenge has got to be confronted, and it has got to be dealt with. I would ask that in terms of the questions that, such as the, for an example, how many functions have been outsourced, for how long, at what cost, and so forth, between the commissioner and Mr. Leshnik, they could actually tackle this question. What has happened to the previous ones? Perhaps the commissioner could also probably talk to that and so on. I think it was the concern from Mr. Wolfers-Zeglen about the question of the claims decrease that we have then. Jay, the position that you advised of earlier on is a correct one, because I think if we would have dedicated time to deal with each and every specific issue, for an example, we would say, for instance, this decrease around the question of claims and many other things that, in my view, that we've not been able to touch on here in sort of kind of inner detail, for example, in understanding the extent of the problems there, that day would then provide us with an opportunity to be able to actually do that. I understand the reservations about turnaround. It's just that there's no other time that we can use.
Many years back, and they're using exactly the same term today.
Remember, I coined an African term for this thing. There's no other word that you can use. Chiramachi.
That's right.
Okay, they would term chiramachi. But there's no other way. We have got to use the term turnaround. Whether it irritates us or it doesn't, or it's whatever, the fact of the matter is that it's not the concept that we're dealing with. We're dealing with the question of how do we ensure that the fund is functional in the manner in which it should be. So that's really the focal point. So around this question, say, with your permission, can I just ask that members of my delegation also deal with some of this, including additional inputs if they think that there are any additional points that need to be made. Thank you, Chair.
And actually, what I want to know, that would be very helpful, is what is happening now? Because, a picture is drawn that if nothing happens, What is happening now? Are we paying, and how long does it take, for instance, to process claims now? Are we improving or are we declining? And so far, in the last 6 months, what have we been doing, Is there something that we can show that in the last 6 months we have started? Yeah. If there are such things, I think it will be helpful. They just to give us hope that, not all around is as dark as, it's not as dark as night as it seems to be. Yeah, let's, who is good?
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. Once again, let me just introduce myself. I'm Brian Leshnick, the acting CFO of the Compensation Fund. I think just to start off, the one question that was raised was, how much do we have in our coffers? You know, is there enough money to pay all claims? And if we just take the audited financial statements as of March last year, the compensation fund has investments of in excess of 30 billion rand. If we take account of the actuarial valuation of our outstanding claims at that point of time, which was about 16 billion rand, we've got accumulated reserves of 14 billion rand. So from a liquidity or viability perspective, the fund itself, based on the data and information it has, is viable and is able to pay the claims that it processes. But I think if you look at the questions that have been asked around that is, well, how many claims are we processing and where the problem is? And I think just to follow on with the other question which asked about the trends of payment over the last, of claims processed and payment over the last few years, and pointing out that there was a decline. I think in this current year, that trend is actually going to be significantly worse. The Director General made reference to the interaction that he's had with a number of service providers, and where they and a number of members themselves made similar references to the fact that they'd received complaints, etc., about payment both of medical services as well as actual claimants themselves. And one of the major reasons for going into this turnaround intervention was to deal with the crisis that we came under, where we had major service providers, hospital groups, etc., threatening to withhold service to the fund because of the problems we were experiencing with payment. A lot of comment has been made about systems, and I think part of the problem was the implementation of the SAP system did not go as well as planned. There were issues in terms of that implementation which led to the problems that we had with processing the claims in the system. What has been done in the last 6 months? I think there have been a couple of key initiatives to try and help with the process. We, as management in the fund, identified that there were some significant limitations in the SAP system as had been designed, and identified certain areas that needed to be improved to also deal with the manual processing. And for example, one of the things that is currently in production and we're about to go into testing is an online claims processing portal for employers to register their claims and have, using the rough 80-20% principle, been able to automatically adjudicate a number of those claims automatically without the need for a whole manually based paper process. A vast number of our claims that come in are not complex in terms of adjudication, that they are very simple in terms of just acknowledging that a claim has been raised, that there's some medical expenses that are involved, and maybe certain compensation to either the employee or the employers in terms of time off work. No major compensation assessments, etc., are required. So that process is in place. The portal is in the process of being designed and being made available to the fund for testing. And to me, that will, going forward, make a major
impact on the process that we have going forward. That doesn't mean that we've still got that doesn't take care of the backlog that the fund has. In terms of medical payments, one of the initiatives that was then put in place was the through the service providers to the Department of Labor, EOH, one of their divisions is a processing, bulk automated processing arm, and we have in the last 2 months instituted a process with them to start with the processing of the large volume claims. And it started with the major service providers who've got the facility to do bulk uploading of information and enabling us to start processing those claims to be able to enable those service providers to actually carry on with delivering services to our constituency, which are the injured workers, because we were at a state that in fact a large number of these service providers and hospital groups were going to withhold their services. In the last 5 weeks using this process, we've paid 250 million rand across in medical payments, which is significantly better than what we have been paying the rest of this year. There was a question around consultants and who the major consultants at the compensation fund. I think there are 4 or 5 who play very different roles. We have a group called Comptron. They assist with the old system that we had in place, Access One. They provide reports, etc., for that, and they were also contracted to assist with the data migration of the information into the new SAP system when that process will take place. That process was put on hold probably about August last year as a result of some of the issues that the Department of Labor had with Siemens and also with the Siemens takeover by EOH, or the purchase of Siemens by EOH, that process was put on hold. So their role is very much will be utilized on an as and when basis once the data migration process starts again. KPMG have been contracted to assist the finance director with the putting together the action plan and helping to train and mentor the audit or the finance staff in the fund. One of the questions that was raised earlier was around skills, audits, etc. And in finance, there is still a weakness in terms of the quality of some of the staff and in terms of their understanding of processes, etc. So KPMG has been contacted to assist with that, and they hopefully with the turnaround strategy, the skills audit, and our ability to then put the correct people in place together with the correct systems that and the finalization of whatever our new system is going to be, whether it is SAP or whatever, they will assist with the training of those individuals. Alexander Forbes are actuaries. They provide actuarial services to the fund. For instance, they're in the process right now of doing for the year end, the whole actuarial liability of the fund. They access all our data and work out what our liabilities and provisions should be. They also assist the fund in terms of the assessment of the data, etc., when we look at what our increases either in the assessment tariffs for employers or the pension fund increases or compensation benefit increases. That's the role they play. So they're very much utilized on an as and when basis dependent. They're not full-time resources that are resident at the fund. They also play a role in terms of our investment committee, where they are an investment advisor to the fund. They assess the, they give an independent assessment of the performance of the PIC, who are the responsible for investing all of our funds, etc., and they just they give an independent evaluation of the performance, etc. There's a small consulting group, C.A. Scott, who work with our claims and pensions department. When there are individual compensation claims, they do the actuarial valuation for that claim. They look at the potential liability that we would need to record in our books around the future pension. They look at each case and they assess the life expectancy and what the payment should be based on the rules of the fund. So again, they are utilized on an as and when basis. There have been, we do utilize other consultants such as Ernst & Young, PK, and Kiwana in terms of partners to our internal audit or risk, especially our risk department when it comes to forensic investigations or fraud investigations. That contract, those contracts were terminated in September. We're in the process of a new process of getting a body of different consultants that we will use for those individual investigations or projects as and when they're needed. But right now, those three are not utilized at the fund.
If I could just make a quick follow-up on that, on the finance division. You're saying that KPMG is helping, excuse me, with the finances. But what is the finance unit doing on a daily basis? Because, and how many people from KPMG are working in the department on this contract? Because then that is it will, in a way, give life to a light, I mean to say, to if, for instance, there is one or three of them, what happens to the rest of the people? Are they learning from you? Are they doing training? Are you doing training? Or are you just doing a job for them? And what do they do? You send them to the shops to buy your own drinks.
A quick follow-up.
And the presenter, how long have you worked in the department? And over those years, the many years that you've been here for that long, how, what do you think the problems are that you do not have capacity internally and that you've got to source this capacity from outside the department? Honorable Master Rumule.
The gentleman is so fluent and articulate for me, but I'm getting confused. The more he says what he's saying. I thought from what the DG was saying with regard to the ownership of the turnaround strategy, the decisions around that, the implementation process of the turnaround strategy. I thought he was going to be specific with regard to that, but he's so articulate. It's taking too long. Along the way, you don't hear what he's saying. I'm getting more questions. Probably, it would be advisable to go back to what Honorable Mudane suggested. That probably we need a more different platform to deal with specific things, rather than to be such a huge gathering. Well, the gentleman really saw it truly, but for me, he doesn't tell me anything.
You are still now I'm just saying that, you know, we talked to the compensation through you this time, and
Thank you.
No, no, because I thought you were going to ask the DG to respond, because there are certain things which he said in his response, which because I think the DG has missed the point. The issue about the turnaround strategy was that this has been tried before. What I hear from members, if you come with another turnaround strategy, you should be able to say to us, this is what was attempted, and these are the problems which arose during that particular attempt. And this one, which I'm coming up with, will solve all those particular problems, but will permanently solve all the problems where the compensation fund is hit. That was my understanding there. It was not like you tried this before, but it failed. It's just something of pride. And now you are coming with a new thing, because a turnaround strategy, once it becomes twice, you can only turn around once. So once you turn around the second time, it becomes a second. It's no more a turnaround strategy. And the other point is that you said you could have done nothing and then just allowed things to happen. And basically, I think you could have buried your head in the sand. The danger of that is that it depends on where you are. Because if you bury your head in the sand in the desert, the whole body might be buried. Ultimately, and if you bury your head in a building sand on the top, on a mountain, when the wind comes, your head might not be buried anymore. So that's the danger of burying your head in the sand. But the issue is that we are not saying you are doing something wrong with your turnaround strategy. That how do you convince us that after you have done what you are saying you are going to do, the problems of compensation fund will be resolved? All of us knows what the problems are. We don't want to just repeat the problem, but we want to be convinced that this time you will definitely solve those particular problems.
Maybe let me just try and respond to 2 points. You made a follow-up, Chair, for instance, about how long Mr. Leshley has been in the conversation fund and so on and so forth. I'm not sure, but I'm not sure how long he has been there. That would qualify. But I should think that at some point we must have presented a report right about some of the challenges we're facing in the area of financial management and the fund. Commissioner would remind me here, because we then made an intervention almost 8 to 10 months ago to then deal with the issue of, for example, to remove somebody there to another environment, and then we had to contract Mr. Leshnik to come in and help us. Now, he says when he introduces himself, he introduces the fund that is the acting CFO, which means in the fund we do not have a CFO. And that's one of the priority areas in terms of capacitating the area of finance. That's the situation for now. Because the situation had gone so bad at some point that we could not even produce your monthly financial statements. So it had gone to that particular point, and therefore we had to make this form of an intervention. So around that question, that's the thing. So basically, in a way, we are talking to a person who has been in the environment for about 8-10 months. Yeah, 10 months exactly. That's the thing. On the question that Mr. Khanera I'm happy that you clarified the point, because I think it's very unfrequent, but I'm very happy. Because I would say to you that I think for me there are two critical points that must be ensured in the entire process. The one, I think I've said it, it's the question of ownership at a macro leadership level in running with this particular process. The other one is the question of regular briefings. For instance, what is it that is unfolding? Are we successful? What is it that is not succeeding? And I think that's within the context of oversight work, really, that you know this committee can actually do that. What I don't hear, and perhaps I would want to say maybe that's a difference, what I don't hear is whether or not in the past, when we appeared and said, these are the turnaround initiatives that we were making, whether or not we regularly appeared to provide updates around that kind of work and the and whether that work has overseen at this particular level, that appears not to be coming out. But for me, these are two things. Ownership at a macro leadership level. Second point is, of course, the issue of regularly appearing for the portfolio committee to update a honorable member about, you know, whether they success, whether they fail and so on, and what are factors if we fail, so what are the factors that lead to failure. If we succeed, what are the factors that inform that level of success? And that's what matters. That I'm saying that is that's within the oversight context. Well, suppose I can't stand here and say, you know, this is what you should be doing as the portfolio committee, for an example. But we do make a commitment that when required to do so, in fact, from time to time, even in whatever context, we will appear before the portfolio committee to brief honorable members about how the process is unfolding. And I think that would, in my view, guarantee sort of the success rate and the success rate of such an initiative, for example. Thank you very much.
There's been a coup while you were talking. Do members have any more questions of clarity to ask?
Chairperson, we've now had an assurance that we will be kept informed and so on. Acting chair.
I've been told that you're protected. Only a camera, please.
Please, will the DD go a little bit further and not only promise to keep us informed, but can he promise us that, for example, in this current year, the number of claims dealt with and the number of payments, you know, will show an upward trend, that the delay is experienced by people, whether it is with the call center in Pretoria or whether it is with the finalization of the camps, that the delays will be smaller or less at the 31st of March than it was at the 1st of April last year. That is the kind of assurances that we really require of it. Thank you.
Do you want more people to do that?
Obviously, if the figures go down, that means that there are no injuries in the factory. Because I think it was mentioned in the long-term strategy, the rehabilitation of workers who have been injured. We know that some of them, employment is being terminated on the basis of incapacity. But it was made mention that you are also looking at that. And it's music in my ears, DJ. It's something that was raised even before your time. The issue was, what the compensation fund, working with the department, is to make sure that there is amendment of the act itself. So it's being mentioned as a long-term strategy, as a long-term, all the time. Now, the question for me is, how far are we with that? Because it can't be a long-term or ever. It has been a long term, even before your time, at that the compensation fund is looking at that. I think it would be proper then if we can be, advised how far are we with that amendment, which in a way is to make sure that workers who have been injured and then as a result of laws, they're not dismissed on the basis of incapacity. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Acting Chair. The DG made a point that there was not in the presentation about the forensic investigation that's happening. Could we just be given some insights? When did it start? How long is it going to be running? Because we'd really like to know what the outcome is going to be there.
Expert. Now I want to go back to when we started with the compensation. You know, it was the two previous years from 2008 and 2009 had disclaimers, and then they came 2010 and 2011. There was some improvement. Where their financial auditor qualification, meaning that they were moving towards the correct direction, or there was some sort of an improvement, because the commissioner committed himself to say, I will do whatever it takes for me to turn around this department, the entity. But somewhere, somehow, because from what I gather from the DG is that right now we are back to the situation where we came from when we started. What went wrong? Where did the enthusiasm and where did the I would love to get the answer from the commissioner. So where did it go wrong? Where did you put aside the commitment that you had put on this entity? What went wrong? Because I mean, you can see we were getting somewhere, but we had now regressed to where we were coming from. And partly from that, I want to recall on some of what the commissioner had said, that you know, he advised the committee to say, medical aids do their claims through a system. Some systems are real-time management systems whereby maybe like most med schemes are administered by med schemes, and they are medical aid are able to put in their claims, pay them in time. I mean, those systems seem to be working for medical aid. And for the compensation fund, I don't know what stopped the commissioner from actually trying doing a trial run on some of the systems or some of the work done by medical aid. That's just what I wanted to.
Thank you. It seems that all the leadership left. So some of the questions, the recent questions that have been raised, if the officials that are here from the department and also the compensation fund can answer these questions, please. CFO. Commissioner, sorry.
Yeah. For arriving late, I think I was stuck in the traffic. I want to emphasize the apology. I think if you look at the trend was moving towards the improvement side. However, we had challenges in the previous year. I think in the finance area was a leadership challenge, and we made an intervention to request the DD to assist us to replace the CFO, and Mr. Lenin came to assist, and that's why he's 12 months. I think the issue there was more of leadership and infighting in the finance session. and the capacity of staff that was recruited in that section. And I think one of the mandate of this FDFO was to change that environment, identify the skills gaps, and source the right people who can manage that, that area well. Because I think it's a core. I think with regard to the improvements that were made, I think you recall that the minister made an announcement in the budget vote last year that for the first time employers will submit their returns, annual returns, online, and I think that did take place. However, we had a service provider problem there. I think the IT has been a major factor in us, in holding us back. However, Siemens, through the places we put, they were able to get the web running. And I think what I have done since my coming back, you know, end of November, was to evaluate that ANF. And I think I was talking to the CFO the other day, was to say I think we need to radicalize that area to create incentives to employers to use the web. And I think the DG has approved an incentive for employers, for example, to submit so that we don't have paper coming to the organization. I think all employers will be using their web will be entitled to 5% discount on the assessment to try to move away from paper. And I think the energy that is required there is to publicize, make that web well known to the public so that they can use it and move away from paper. Because when you use paper, you have challenges of catching errors, you have challenge of revisions. Everyone might say, I didn't say I have 50 workers, I didn't say my payroll was 5 million. So there's a lot of errors there which delays the finalization of assessments and invoicing. But the web approach, pass the responsibility to the employer. He becomes the owner of the information. So there's less chance of revision, less chance of detection. And we are able to address the issue of age analysis because on the day he submits, he gets an invoice. So aging starts from there. So there's no issue of aging problems, which if you look at the OTRAS report, the problem is age analysis in that area. And I think if they strengthen that area, we'll be able to strike success in that area. I think in the last year, in the first 2 weeks of the web being introduced to employers, I think the CFO announced to his committee that we're able to collect over 600 million in 2 weeks, something that had never happened in the East of this fund. I think that's where the energy must go now, is to publicize, improve on the system, increase the bandwidth so that this employer must not complain about when trying to access the system when able. I think that's the focus on the bandwidth, publicity, and create incentives. And punish those who want to use the paper. Create a disincentive for those who want to use paper. Because it's also against our environment, our environmental initiatives. I think that's one area. On the team side, I think you remember that we were here before and to report that we are now going back and we had to forego some initiatives. I think you've mentioned the Rand Metal initiatives. We had to forego those because of the SAP system. And indeed, the SAP solution was not a new solution for the compensation plan. And I think testimony is exactly what you are hearing. That the claims processing has decreased significantly. I think the DG has come to us assistance during my absence. I think he was able to realize the situation. I think the right intervention that he's brought in, and I think the GFO reported of the success that we made in those interventions. I think the real challenge is that we need to reinforce those interventions. So that we can deal with this issue. I think the issue of the turnaround is to deal with the totality of the change. You don't change pockets in an organization, you must change the entire organization for it to be effective. And I think the challenge that we've been having in the past that we've been working on silos, and I think the other side was not appreciating the good that the other side was doing. I think that's the intention of this bigger initiative, which is coming. I think on the issue of the rehabilitation, as I remember, we have promised that we will draft the amendment. I think we have finalized the amendment. They have been submitted to the department for the unit for them to clean the issues, align them with the various legislation, because they have to speak the same language. If we define employer, it must be the same across the department. Definition of earnings must be the same. So the police unit is working on sharing those issues. The board finalized the amendment bill 2 weeks ago. I think the deadline was the 31st of January. So they met the deadline. They handed over the bill to the department. So we are hoping that in the next month or two, we'll be done with the taking process in the policy unit, and the minister will formally receive the amendment bill. It does touch on aid of the reputation. However, what we need to do is to draft the regulations as to how employers are going to manage rehabilitation. But I can indicate that the approach is similar to the employment history approach, where we have divided employers according to size. There are those employers who have full responsibility for rehabilitation. There are those that the fund will assist in ensuring that there are policies and schemes to manage rehabilitation. Thank you.
Thanks. Honourable Kubela Mashele, I think we need to fold this so that we move into the triple P. Remember what I said when we opened the meeting, that these are just questions of clarity to clarify on what has happened. And that we are going to have another session where we are going to now engage. This time we just have important clarity. We need to sit down with the commissioner and its management, and including the board, because I wonder what the role of the board is in all this. What value are they adding to what we are dealing with? There are issues of systems, and there are issues of personnel, and management issues again. There are things that the compensation is supposed to go on a daily basis. That is, compensate workers. That is exactly what they are supposed to be doing. People are injured, people who sustain injuries at work, and those who suffer from occupational diseases. And most of these people we are talking about are people who don't have access to lawyers, who don't have lawyers. We're talking about vulnerable workers, because people who are self-employed and others who are professionals do not worry about these things of compensation. They've got insurances, they have medical aid, then they can actually fend for themselves. So we're dealing with issues of people who, if this person is not giving his or her money within 3 months of him losing his job, it means that the kids cannot go to school. It means that they cannot be food at home. It means you can't even pay school fees. And what it means, again, the worst thing is that your life, instead of improving, it is going to go down. Because the doctors don't want to help you because the commission is not paying them on time. Now, those that we are able to pay now, are we going to be able to sustain this payment with the kind of resources that we have? Systems, the personnel we have, we cannot depend on consultants. I mean, it's something else having a consultant coming in to do some work. But then to take a consultant at the acting CFO, it's something else. I mean, the CFO position is a very, very strategic position in the department. And if I'm to work as a consultant, obviously I'll try to cover myself in each. You know, there are other programs that we can work on. You know, I'm just saying that, you know, it leaves a bitter taste in the mouth, particularly if information is not available to say, you know, this is where we are and we're here, we're where we are because of these reasons, and this is how we're going to move from that point A to point B, which will help us, for instance, to be able to stand on our own. I've asked a question about the cost. One to the turnaround strategy. Nyagamba is considered, I don't know whether it's not Bravo or Nalevu or it's a combination of both, which means that we are moving in cycles. You know, the costs are very important. There's a, and again, as the committee, we agree, and we'll give the AG, and we will like, again, to say we are buying into the AG's concern about continuous use of consultants in the public service. You know, the AG raised this report about government departments using consultants continuously. So the cost is each.
And the sustain,
the ability for us to sustain what we are doing. Honorable Makul, I should let the hand up, and then after that I'll give over to you, then we can move on to the triple P.
Chairperson, I want to put this to forth, is that, you know, there are turnaround strategies that were implemented and have failed, and now we are moving on other turnaround strategies which we are trying to implement. Is it not time for the warm bodies to be also turned around, because we might find that those turnaround strategies will never work, because the warm bodies there will always be a hindrance to the turnaround strategy. Is it not the correct time for us to take decisions to turn around from top management of the compensation fund for these turnaround strategies to work? Because I see we everybody, you know, has talked about the very same problems and the entrenched corruption and fraudulent activities happening in the compensation fund. And you can, I sitting here see that this will always be a problem, because the warm bodies that are there know how to maneuver and they know how to get their way out. So is it not time for us to actually think of moving the warm bodies and bringing new fresh blood of warm bodies that would implement our 10-round strategy? That's my submission.
Look, I'm not going to allow people to raise. Each time somebody speaks, then you feel agitated, you want to say something. Otherwise, we'll end up spending the whole day discussing only one item on the agenda. You are going to be the last one, Honorable Funder. And if there's anyone who wants to say something, raise your hands now, because you will be the last one to talk on this one, so that we have a movement forward. Honorable Motau, is there another hand? Okay.
Thank you. Chairperson, I asked of the DG certain assurances regarding the performance of the fund during the current year, which I didn't hear him give. And I just want to know, must I read anything in that? Or is it just a time limit issue that he didn't give me those assurances?
Honorable Muta. Thank you. Just a reminder, I asked a question about the forensic investigation.
No, thank you very much. I'm not sure where Mr. Fung's decision, I'm not sure what I remember. Was it the declining claims and claims?
That's right, where claims were faster, whether the number of claims dealt with during this year was so increased, whether the amount dispersed
will the higher those things, have they been turned around, and will we be able to see that at the end of this financial year?
Look at that question. It's linked to the question I was asking about how are we doing now? Because there are people out there who need our services and teaching. And like I said, these are the most vulnerable people, you know. How do we reduce this load? Because from what I read on the ages, there's about 9,000 something, you know, plus 8,000 people who are waiting to receive their monies and nothing is happening. There are problems of verification of information, the e-filing and the SAP system are not communicating or they are not actually helpful, you know. What's up?
It's an application.
Let me put it this way. Let me just kind of state one thing upfront. In the difficulties that the compensation fund is faced with, we should not then read as though financially we're not sound, we're actually sound. I mean, it's unlike, for instance, other funds, entities, and or agencies, for instance, that when they needed to develop a turnaround, they were below zero, for an example, insofar as a fluidity and so on. So the fund is it's quite fluid. So, linked to that, we will continue to, you know, do the best of our ability in so far as the question of settling claims and processing these and so on. It's not something else, and this is one thing that perhaps should also be understood. We're not saying that for claims to be processed efficiently and whatever, and otherwise we would have to wait for a turnaround strategy to be in place. It's ongoing work on the one hand. In there, we've also identified areas that are somewhat of quick fixes, for an example, that necessarily may not need to wait for a turnaround strategy to be in place in order for that to happen, because it's ongoing work. So at that level, we still keep on pushing and insisting that we have got to meet our deliverables and so on. Now, and perhaps the issue that I started with, Chair, about sustainability financially, is perhaps answered by the extent of our fluidity as a fund. Now, on the forensic investigation, I think the question was, when did we start this process? Yesterday we were finalizing the actual terms of reference for that work. In other words, solving that kind of activity in terms of what is it that has got to happen. But like all other things, of course, you know, a forensic investigation, you know, it's not a kind of a resource that you will draw internally and so forth. That means must actually look for and expect it out there to actually come in and do the forensic work and so on. Government and the state is actually a body made up of rules and regulations by and large, and laws. Now, so when we need to turn around one body, Honourable Marshall, there is a particular process that has got to be followed. Interestingly, this is also the point I was trying to point out to the AG in some of the engagements this week. Because the sequence is simple. You need to have a scientific investigation, a fact that gets presented before in terms of the extent of the problem. Establish and determine that, and then move on to the next step. What do you need to do with the implicated warm bodies, for an example? And that question itself is also governed by applicable laws, your Public Finance Management Act, your anti-corruption legislation, and the rest. So, in a way, it is the kind of work around the forensic work, for instance, that would reveal the extent of the problem. That would also deal with the question of what is it that you made it to do with the war bodies and soil books. And I think there was a point also raised about, I'm not sure whether it's systems versus people or among something. I can't remember, but we've stressed this point and are still stressing it. So the thing we need to have is, I think the commissioner was putting it the correct term, you need to have a holistic approach in getting around an entity such as this. You need to deal with people, you need to deal with the your systems, you need to deal with your business processes, amongst other things. I think I'm reminded of one point. Somebody from the age was asked me a very pointed question. Are you hopeful and really, can you really trust that you can change the culture of people at a conversation? I think, I don't know what I said, but how I responded to that, I said, probably I need a prayer from the seven Spanish angels or something. In order to be able to do that, because you do have an organizational culture, not something that you just slip around at any time or within a short space of time, and so on. It's something that you consistently have got to work on, informed by the work that you have to start by doing, your groundwork, as you would say, and then say, these are the programmatic kind of approaches I would have to put in place to deal with the issues of the organizational culture and stuff like that. That's an additional point to issue of turning around the warm bodies. Thank you very much. I'm sorry. The question of the cost, we can only be informed by what we get out there in the market, for example. You know, it's got to be difficult to say a forensic audit work or a turnaround strategy work would cost as much. In other words, the reason why we go for competitive bidding, people will come to us and say, this is how much it would cost if we are to render this kind of service to you as a compensation fund.
At my consultant that you have presented, I think let's deal with that one, because this is very important. Because if we have people who are supposed to do the job in the department, but we still get other people to come and do the job for them, and then there's no proper explanation of what are we gaining out of this. You know. Are there learnings that we are learning from these people then?
The Honourable Chair, on the scope of work that the forensic investigator would have to do, it's also that point. What is the value for money that we derive by having these people in place? So there has got to be that evaluative kind of exercise. So in the forensic work itself, that's also a specific area in there among the terms that we are putting on.
I'm not quite sure whether am I too dull to understand what you are saying, or maybe you should use English when you explain in your English. And I'm just saying now, we've got people who work here, we don't know what value they are adding. We must get somebody to come and check what the value has they added, because an investigation can only look backwards. You know, you look backwards and forward, but it's mostly looking at what has happened. And based on what has happened, this will possibly happen in the future, going forward. But if you've got people who have worked for you for this long, and they've made transactions, but when people interact with your accounts, that's a relationship at a very, very high level. You know. But still we cannot tell how much money we are spending on them.
But anyway, maybe this question cannot be answered here because it involves quite a lot of things. This will be one of those questions that need to be answered when we meet in our next meeting. But it's supposed to be a clarity question because it's not about engagement, whether we see value. No, you can raise your voice.
Oh, sorry.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay, then. So this worries me, DG, but I think we'll engage with it when the commission comes. And in the next meeting that we're only going to deal with the compensation and the challenges and way forward, no any other thing. Answer those last few questions and then we move into the PPP.
No,
Can you move to the next presentation?
So thanks, I hope
excuse me. We're not going to take a break so people can have a waking tea break. So those want to have tea and did cooking and I did the man.
Honourable members, the presentation that we are to run through today is about it's about the ITPP contract. I think what the presentation would do, it should give the context briefly in terms of what exactly we're talking about and so forth, and also an overview which is almost like a very brief assessment of what has transpired over the 10-year period. Specifically, I think there we will want to zoom into the question of the lessons learned. Lastly, I think the last portion of the presentation will then be dealing with the way forward into the future from this point onwards on the side of the Department of Labor. And perhaps, I think, in the presentation, we would talk about even the X model, for example, which is something that at some point we did come here before. The portfolio committee will also talk about that you are emerging out of a situation and therefore what is the next kind of model for the IT environment within the Department of Labor. And with your permission, Chair, I would ask that DDC Corporate Services leads us in the presentation of this subject. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honourable members and colleagues. As the DG has already intimated, I'm just going to touch on the ITPP and IT strategy update. It's an overview. It's not going to go into the detail of the strategy itself. It's going to be the lessons learned out of PPP contract, and then, of course, how we are going to be implementing the ICT strategy. As you will recall, the contract with Siemens was entered into in 2002. It was a PPP contract, the first and the only one of its kind to be done in the country. And the idea behind it was that it was intended to provide operational services, access to industry expertise, as well as transformation of applications. And I think at the time, the understanding was that the public sector does not have the expertise to run this IT system, come up with new applications, and therefore a partnership with a private sector company would achieve this intention. And so the contract ran for 10 years, and the running of the 10 years of the contract ended at the 20th of November 2012, and thereafter the the contracts, after the contract had expired, there's a provision in the contract that allows for termination support, and so the termination support clause was invoked. So the Triple P did not realize the intent of transforming ICT because only three of out of the eight applications were completed to fit to full satisfaction. Now, what that means is that three of those met business satisfaction fully, three of those were de-scoped, and 12 partially met business satisfaction. And so in the end, the Triple P, a comprehensive exit and services transfer exercise was completed, turned over all knowledge to the department and prepared for the implementation of the ICT strategy. Now, in reality, what this means is that in 2003, a year after we had commenced with Triple P contract, we were meant to have an exit and services transfer plan. The plan would address a number of issues. It would address the issues around governance. So it would address issues around the operating model of the Triple P, because after the Triple P, it meant that the department, after not having had the expertise and the resources to run with this contract, would be handed over, in a sense, a blueprint on how to continue with services going forward. It was also about saying that there should be some form of business enablement and the understanding of what infrastructure is in place, in order for the department to move forward. This happened up to the end of 2012 on the 20th of November. And so we are in the process of the termination support, wherein we are being given support to run with the program, whilst we are undergoing a process of appointing new service providers. And I do say service providers and not a service provider, because when we were in the middle of the exit and services transfer plan, we looked at a number of areas in the Triple P contract that did not work for the department. One of which was that we had one service provider who gave us a service for everything. So it's an end-to-end contract. It's a contract that includes people, it's a contract that includes hardware, it's a contract that includes applications, etc. So there was an over-reliance on one service provider to give us everything, where it left the department really bereft of any type of resources that you might need going into the future. Enter May 2012, wherein we looked at an accident services transfer plan and the implementation of a strategy. Now, the last time that the Department of Labor had an ICT strategy was in 1998. So for the longest time, we have been operating without an ICT strategy. And so an ICT strategy is now in the process of being implemented, and this was drafted and finalized in 2012. And so the new ICT operating model that is being implemented includes the building of internal capacity, because we have not had capacity. It also includes the appointment of vendors for additional capacity in specialized areas. In fact, we appointed PricewaterhouseCoopers as our transaction advisors, because we are going to go into a process of appointing new vendors who will give us the services that we so desperately need. From a human resources point of view, we have started with the recruitment of critical staff to give us services going forward. We have also looked at, in terms of the ICT strategy, we're also looking into technology business requirements for core systems are being developed, and in critical areas especially, such as the compensation fund and GIS, and to ensure that these are completed for the medium to long term. We're also looking at infrastructure improvement engagements, including tools of trade, and again, this is a short to medium term process. Next slide, please. Now, part of the issues that I raised with the Triple P contract is the fact that the relationship between service providers were being seen as the Department of Labor was less than successful. And I guess that in any other normal relationship, the ties would have been severed if it was a relationship between two people. For example, you could have instituted divorce proceedings. But as it were, we had to wait until the end of the contract. So a number of issues were highlighted in terms of what we have learned about the PPP. One is that governance structures that agreed upon should be made functional by management and not left to collapse. Now, we've had steering committees, and we have had all manner of governance structures that were meant to govern the relationship between the two partners, and those were not strictly adhered to. We also learned that contractors cannot be left to manage themselves. We need skilled internal capacity, which should always be established to manage the contract delivery. So we needed people with expertise in project management. We required people with expertise in business analysis, service level measurement, and understanding how to manage service level agreements. And the third thing, which is also important, is that we need to put in place clear contracting principles, particularly principles related to critical aspects such as financial management of the contract. Because with the management of such a long-term contract, I mean, part of the challenge, I guess, is that you also fall into the trap of being relaxed in the relationship and not managing the financial relationship of the contract in a way that benefits the department. We now have an approved ICT strategy, and we are in the process of implementing it. And essentially, it's looking at four features. The first one is the transition period. This is the period that we're in now. And like I said, the contract has ended on the 20th of the PPP contract on the 20th of November of 2012. But within the contract gives provision for us to have termination support, so that we have some kind of hand-holding until such time that we appoint a new service provider or new service providers. And the purpose of those new service providers of the termination support in the transition period is really so that we become operational, that we do not allow things to collapse completely whilst in the process of appointing new service providers. So it's a hand-holding process. Where we're looking at ICT governance, at our processes, at our structure, and at ICT sourcing. The second leg of the strategy is that this is business enablement. It is an approach which will look at front office management, our core systems, cross-functional systems, and the back office. And then, of course, we have the heart or the guts of business, which is our infrastructure. And this is where the crux of ICT services lies, because this is where we have our data centers, our networks, telephony, and we have our desktop services and devices. And it happens on the main at the core phase. This is your compensation fund where the payment of benefits is done, UIF. And then the last one is our ICT skills factory. Because sort of the lesson that we've learned is the fact that we cannot operate ICT by completely outsourcing it, and we can't afford to have end-to-end services, but that we also require our own internal capacity. We are looking at the issue of internal capacity, but we're also looking at a broader issue of saying, how then do we create the necessary skills, because as the Department of Labor, we also feel that we can contribute towards ensuring that ICT skills become not only the skills of the Department of Labor in the unit that is ICT, but that we contribute more towards the South African skill set in ICT. The objective, in a nutshell, are that we are looking at core business systems, support services systems, we're looking at cost reduction in the way that we do business. We're also looking at business continuity, and we're looking at green IT. The days of pushing paper physically are over, and we're looking at doing and conducting business more responsibly, socially and environmentally. Thank you. We will take questions from here.
Thanks, this ICT strategy, will it cut across all entities of the department, or are we still going to have UIF using their own system and compensation another, or are we going to have a package that will take care of everything as it's related to our core business? Honorable Williams, Honorable Mudau, Honorable Nyagema, Honorable Van der Wezen, Honorable Mohamed. Is your hand up?
Thanks, Chairperson. I've just got one question with regard to understanding contracts and contract management. If we look back over the history of the situation, it seems that contracts was the biggest problem, and the lack of understanding within the Department of Contracts and how devastating that can be if you actually sign the wrong documents. So I'd like to know what... have you put any mechanisms in place to capacitate management, not only in contract management, but in actual the drafting of contracts? Because this is all well and fine now, but in the future you could run into the same problem again, where shrewd businessmen will use their contracting capacity to undermine the department, and you will be stuck in the same position again. So I want to know whether there is has been any mechanisms put in place to teach people how to... write contracts properly so that they don't run into serious problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to sound like a stuck CD or record this one. Listen to this one. I have a sense that about 11 years ago, a group of people sat in a room just like this one, and they were told about Siemens IT. And we told some of the things that Ms. Moulibatri was telling us about how this new IT strategy is going to work, how it's going to save us costs, how it's going to bring us bodies, how to have the expertise, and so on and so forth. 11 years later, we are sitting here restarting the process. 2 billion red down. We have nothing to show for it. Very little. And all the DG believes that, well, obviously the systems have been working and stuff like that. Which is true, but that's not what the contract says. Even this summary tells us only 3 of the agreed, elements were met. 18 have not been met. So my question is this. What guarantee do we have that when we get into this new IT strategy, we're going to end up with the things that we say we want to have? For instance, after I learned the lesson, for instance, internal capacity. We don't have it. We haven't had it for the last 11 years. How are we going to have it? My colleague asked about contract management. These people don't have the skills, so we're going to continue on this treadmill over and over again. Unfortunately, it costs us money. And I'm going to ask, Chair, that what we need here is a comprehensive report to this committee about the winding up of that IT process with Siemens, Accenture there, but I believe there's another entity now that has come into the picture. It was just mentioned earlier on, EOH, that has apparently taken over Siemens IT. It's the first I hear about it. I don't know about it. So we need to get, how do they feed into the equation? How are they going to assist us in all of these things? So I'm sorry, Chair, the DG earlier on said we shouldn't be despondent. I'm really despondent about this one.
Who was next on my list?
No.
No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No. No
It was Manamela. It was Manamela and then...
I have to speak. Sajbo, the question that I want to raise is you have made the presentation very nice and indicating where we are coming from, where are we, and where we are going. I understand the presentation trying to reflect that. And also speaking to lessons that we've learned in the process and how to avoid that and not to have it. Moving forward, my question is: what I heard you presenter talking about employing services of some service providers trying to avoid of having one player. Now, my question is: there's a public entity called State Information Development Agency. I once heard that public entity indicating work that it is doing with the compensation fund two or a year ago. Now, I just want to understand what is your relationship, the work that you intend to do with this public entity. I'm raising this because this is a public entity which I believe government is pumping money to this entity. Yes, it has challenges. It has its own turnaround strategy. has its own geometry, yeah. Where things are looking better in that public interest. Now, how are you planning to work with that public entity in relation to information technology? Thank you.
They too have their own consultants. Who's next up? Honorable.
Thank you. Chairperson, we were quite upset almost a year ago to learn that Accenture was appointed without going out on an open bid process due to time constraints to assist the department with the exit strategy. A year has gone by, and my impression is that the existing contract with Siemens, who has now been taken over by this new entity, is it EOH, is still continuing with the contract, despite the problem cited with the current contract, which seems that in a year's time, the department has not been able to come up with the necessary capacity to take over, as I think you would have expected at the end of a 10-year contract. And my question is just, how long is this appointment of EOH? Can anybody give us the assurance that at the end of this year, or whatever the term may be, that the contract with EOH will then be terminated and that the necessary capacity will by that time exist within the Department of Labor to take over the responsibility of this? The second thing is just, and I really appreciate the honesty of Ms. Molobatsi, but if I read here, it seems to me what she's actually saying is we as a department have, we failed. We did not make sure that the necessary oversight over the contract was exercised. We left the contractors to manage themselves. We did not put in the necessary governance structures and made sure that we had the capacity to hold the contractors to account, and Chairperson, I think at one of our stage we must stop now, act on that. It's all very good and well,
to be honest and to say, well, this is the problem. But my question is, we've known that for more than a year. When you go to the different offices of the Department of Labor, the one complaint that you always get is slow bandwidth, slow computers breaking all the time. Even labor inspectors in without computers on their desks, etc. Two, three people having to share one computer in this day and age. And I just want to say that I think at one other time, the department must take control, and we as a portfolio committee must keep them to account for these failures. We cannot just continue in this way. We are sitting with highly, well, not highly paid, the labor inspectors would say that they're underpaid, but it's an expensive resource in the sense that those labor inspectors are sitting there, they are getting money and not earning money because they don't have the tools of the track that was referred. Can we get the assurance that within the current extended term of the contract with EOH that the department will after this take control of the IT system? Thank you.
Yes, next on my list, Honorable Manamen.
Okay, thank you. Chairperson, I think the there's a point about getting a comprehensive handover report, and I think that point would be quite helpful, that we have here one of the first ever public-private partnership entered into by our government. It has gone on for a period of 10 years. Government has invested 2 billion rands into the whole project. And I think that it is important that we get a comprehensive handover report, which was put together by CIMET. I see the summary, and I think it gives us an idea of what lessons were learned and what hurdles were, jumped and all of that. But I think that a report to that effect would be very critical for us to understand what in detail actually happened throughout this whole project. The second point which I wanted to raise, which emanates from the summary report, is that it's quite concerning, and maybe it will have to be addressed with the comprehensive report, but it is quite worrying that you have a project where in 3 out of 18 of the outcomes have been achieved, 2 billion rands spent on that project, and we say, let us wrap up, let us move forward. I think that it is important that we make sure that we go deeper into what could have been the problem. And that if there were people who were negligent on their duties in the department, that those people should take responsibility. We are sitting here with major problems in the labor centers where people's queries are not being attended to. I think we've seen in the last oversight that we conducted in KZN that the major problem with the Department of Labor's, the major problems in the Department of Labor is the IT problem. And people's ability to capture information and promptly, ensure that information is delivered to the relevant people to act on it. And I think that if we cannot give both the soldiers on the ground in the Department of Labor and people out there who rely on the services of the labor center, if we cannot give them answers on why there are such problems, but also give them the confidence that whatever interventions which are being made will resolve all these problems, I don't think that would be doing any justice. But more importantly, I think it is important that we get to know where were the problems, why only less than 10% of the intended outcomes were not achieved. What has led to that? What actions have
been taken, you know, and all of that. So I think that that's going to be very, very important. The third point, which I think is also my point of emphasis, with the new strategy, we have a state information and technology CETA. And I think that we have to be persuaded why we are using PricewaterhouseCoopers. Have we asked CETA to help with an intervene and an advice on the new strategy and intervention what is it, a turnaround? No, I think it's a completely new IT strategy. What has been its role, you know, and all of that. I think that it's important, because this is an institution that has been set up by the state, which should be playing this particular role. The last point is that when a 10-year project turned with Siemens, and then of course there was Accenture in the picture. Now there's a point I think which is coming up. Siemens was then bought out by EOH. Well, those details I don't know, and I just bumped into it now. But my concern is, you know, you have the DA that takes over from the DP, and you expect that people will vote for the DA who didn't vote for the DP. but the point is that you have a new company, which is EOH, which has taken over Siemens. but you have a company that takes over a company which we're in partnership with. And well, which is then supposed to do the handover. So basically, Siemens in the old name is handing over to Siemens in the new name. Is that what it means? I mean, for me, that's how it you know, it appears. And I think a further clarification on the role, the objectives, and whether those were achieved of Accenture would be very, very critical. And I think specifically the whole issue of EOH, when is it ending, and how is it helping us now with all of these problems which have been identified at a national level on the issues around IT.
Thank you. You know that while the DG's office, it is a responsibility to check what is happening in all these other entities, you know, the UIF, COIDA, Productivity SA, because if things are not going well there, the person who said will be on the block will be that of the DG, because part of his role is to play an oversight role, the responsibility on this entity. And that if this unit that we have gets into contract, the functionality, of those contracts, it's over his head. So he can look down to check which head is chopping. But at our level, this is the only head that is within our reach. We're not going to bend that down to try and cut some heads that we don't even see very well. So I just want to check from the DG, just to assure myself, yeah, that we, on this ICT, Siemens is out. There was a 10-year contract with them. But this 10-year contract had a tail. Yeah, 1 year. And within that 1 year, okay, when did EOH start and when are they exiting?
One.
The other thing, what is this that EOH is doing that Accenture cannot do? And the other thing I want to check is, what's the performance of these two systems? Because here we're talking about institutions and their systems. How are they saving us? Are we getting value for our money? Yes. Because if we are not, then we need to be checking how do we exit. Because there's no use paying a lot of money where you're not getting your service. And the problem with the Siemens contract was that I don't think it was actually designed by us. That's where you get the consultants who do contracts for you and you sign on the dotted line. And when you have clashes with them and you want to pull out, they tell you, oh, the exit clause has this. You cannot pull out now because of section this and that of our exit clause. So, DG, I just want to give me assurance that this interim, because the Accenture and UH are at the inside of what we're doing, actually, you know. The one is at Siemens, the other one I don't know. I mean, you know. So if you can just clarify these two for me. And include the cost, but more importantly, the performance, because I don't think we can get out of the cost if we are signed. Once you have signed, you have tied yourself. You can only whip these people who are working for you, that you actually get what you need from them. You know, because we couldn't jump out of the Siemens contract in the beginning. It took us 10 years, and we realized within less than 5 years that this contract is not taking us anywhere. Please, DG, I want to have a good night. Tomorrow is this one. This one will,
we need to be going on.
Yeah. This one will be helpful, please. No.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Muta.
Yes, thanks. I just want a little gap. The DDG in her presentation made the point that the relationship, the PPP relationship between Siemens IT and the Department of Labor was less than successful. I think that's a huge understatement. It was a failure. We failed.
Thank you very much, Chair. Look, there is a problem, but maybe let me start off from the last point, you know, that Mr. Matao is raising. You know, the difficulty around the triple picking, if we were to broaden that subject, the first, the one and only, and so forth, is that you then have also difficulty. You have no other best practice example anywhere in government around the triple P thing. You don't. So, even if we can be as critical as much as we want, correctly so, but there's nothing that we can use for benchmarking purposes, for example. And I think that's one thing. And I think at some point we may want to really confront the realities of the situation. Triple P means you have three parties to an agreement. Where is the third party? What happened to it? I think that question they've never really evaluated. You have the Department of Labor, you have Siemens, you have National Trade. So where is the third party? So you could also enter a different set of a discussion around that. And so all in all, I think we agree, and let us all agree. The Triple P experiment in the Department of Labor was a failure. So there's nothing that we can find about that involved. Now, one of the things that we did way back in 2002, 2003 was to, what's the proper English? Well, to death match is death match the correct English? You, when capacity vessels are in place, whatever it was, when we're entering into a triple arrangement. But it is, this is a correct assumption that I can make, at least on our behalf, to then see, but we detonated that kind of capacity. Okay? Because eventually you had a contract that we had no capacity to manage. And therefore it was just like a floating boat in one form or the other and stuff like that. And I think that was one blunderous strategic position that we must have taken. We admit to that, which means that moving into the future, we have to ensure the issue of capacity so that we're able to contract manage. People that we contact and do work for us must actually hear from us what is it that we want and how that which we want must then be done. You know, it can't be the other way around. You know, it is the business imperative and strategic objective of an organization that must inform the work to be done. Now, on your question, you want a guarantee about internal capacity. We can give you that guarantee. We have, within the short space of time between April 16, 2012, and yesterday, there are two things that we did. One of them is that we now have an approved structure for ICT within the department. In that's the question of the internal capacity. And the second one that we did is that we have started a process of recruiting. I think Mr. Sifadi were shortlisting a week and a half ago, for an example, at least for four director posts and so forth and so on. But that's part of creating a level of a capacity. Of course, this is a process. My hope is that by the time the year falls, year 2013 falls, we would have made some sort of progress towards the issue of capacitation, for instance, in the office of the CIO. I'm not sure. I think somebody spoke about EOH continuing with contracting. It must have been Mr. Ivan Verheyse. There's the business study effort. There's a huge chapter in matter of differences of opinions. And I'm stressing the same opinion, but not law. around the question of the termination support provision. And of course, if you were to ask me, how did we have the termination support clause 3.13.1 in the main contract? I do not know. I mean, now it's certainly not there. And probably all of us here are also not there. So there's a huge, their views, their opinions around that. On the question of, this is, I'm raising this thing because he says that it's an extension. And he says, but this is a termination support service. And it's defined in that main contract. And it's also, even for that matter, enunciated in terms of what services are to be focused upon during that particular period and so on. It's almost like what people would call a handheld kind of exercise, for an example. And at some point, I would love to begin to deal with the matter from a legal point of view. I think I would be very interested to hear a legal perspective on this issue, because you hear all sorts of funny stories about EOH was appointed. It's as if it's an appointment outside of the SCM, for instance. Or let me say EOH stroke Siemens, an appointment outside the SCM process and so forth. And I'm saying, I keep on stressing this point, those are views, those are opinions, but views and opinions can't gravitate to legal matters, to legal issues. Because legal issues, they deal with fact. They don't deal with norms. It has become a norm that if we don't feel good about an administrative action that has been taken, a view and an opinion becomes equated to a legal matter and so forth. And I think that's where the problem is around this particular point. Accenture was drawn in on a specific mandate, and a specific mandate for Accenture at the time. And this is also why we differ with certain people, including the AG, with respect to the particular question. But, you know, we differed, it doesn't matter, they differed with us and still said whatever they needed to say around the question. Accenture, just by way of background, the Department of Labor was expected in 2003 to put in place an exit and services transfer plan, and it didn't. In 2011, I'm trying to figure out the month, but it could have been anything between August and September of that year. That's the only time that we as the department were then dealing with the question of an exit and services transfer plan. Now, the time spent between 2003 and 2011, I'm sure it's about what, 80s, right? So they tell us, those parents who know better, they tell us, they say, you should have planned. And I'm saying, okay, fine, I agree. As management, we should have planned. We knew that we should have put this in place. But in essence, you are then talking to people who were there in 2003. You're not talking to people who are here now in 2011 finding a situation where this thing has not been done, and it was becoming quite pretty urgent. So you had no service transfer plan in place, you had no strategy in place, and so forth. And I think as Ms. Mulebak was saying, that the last time we had this strategy, the department was 1998. So all of those things had to be. So again, you had differences of views and opinions around but that particular question and so forth. But as I'm saying, Chair, that at some point, we should be bold enough to gravitate those issues into the legal arena so that you have facts dealt with in the correct manner and so on. So the specific mandate for Accenture, for an example, is around exit and services, the transfer plan. And I think maybe the CIO may want to come in terms of the state of the things around the question of where we are, that has been done and so forth. But question that panel members would be interested in is the question of the is the question of how the plan is unfolded. Perhaps you would want to talk to that. Mr. Monamla raises a critical point. Things that should have happened, you know, what action has been taken administratively, you know, to deal with. I suspect you mean to deal with people who didn't do what they were supposed to. Here's the complication. The complication for me, oh, by the way, let me say, I think I agree with the principle. The principle is either you do something and do it right, or you don't. And if you don't, necessary action must be taken. Simple. It's a straightforward thing. If there's a violation in law, things might also happen to you. Now, the complication is this, is that you would have to you would have to go and dig. Some of the individuals, some of them maybe are dead, some of them are out there, out of out of the main body of the Department of Labor, to then subject them to a process, for an example, such as disciplinary action and otherwise. In some other cases, it would also have some implications. I'm not too sure, for an example, that the current management structure, to what extent can it be implicated in some of these issues. And if people are implicated, you then have a humongous kind of challenge to deal with an X number of people around that particular question, and of course the meeting gaps in terms of people that are no longer there to come in and whatever. Now, I'm not trying to say, Honourable Chair, that necessary action where it should be taken, that I'm trying to run away from that particular responsibility. All I'm trying to say is that it's a complicated kind of picture that you would have to deal with. there are people that are no longer there in the government, in the department. There are people who committed, amongst other things, this department to something like no less than 9 million rand for the kind of transaction. And they left. So you need to find them somewhere. You need to find people who must have been, I don't know, played whatever role in the construction of some of these parliamentary. So that's what I think is the complication. But can I perhaps ask that I'm not sure between yourself and the Moleva and the Mr. So why do I call Mr. Tafadi Miss?
Thank you, Chair. The questions that were asked about strategy, that the Chairman asked about strategy. Chairperson, the strategy that is being implemented is a department-wide strategy. So it's not only a strategy that is going to deal with the Department of Labour, but will also address UIF and compensation fund matters. The question on contract management is an important one. And it has been an issue around capacity, and we are addressing the capacity issue. We are employing 119 people to look at ICT. And in fact, we were getting the services of 12 minus 300 people from the contract. So and we're starting off at zero base. And I think you will appreciate the amount of time and resources that is going to have to be put into the effort to be put into this, to ensure that, first of all, not only do we have the correct people for the position, but we also have the correct number of people, so people are not overburdened because of the fact that we're starting on a zero base. So that will include people who have the experience and the expertise to draft contracts, understand contracts, drive service level agreements with suppliers, in the ICT environment, but also, there's another important thing that we are now going to be entering into. As companies, we realize that we are a provider of services to the department, and so we also need to enter into contracts with other branches so that they hold us to account, so that we are able to give them the kind of service that they require of us. So it's a much bigger process than what it seems at the moment. Mr. Mudau asked the question around internal capacity, contract management, and another thing on contract management, our supply chain people will also be part of the ensuring of all of these contracts are looked into, and it's going to be part of the bid process, so that the understanding of this contract is absolutely critical. If anything, that's the one thing that we're going to be able to take out of this experience. And the fact that we did not manage this contract as we should have, and it has led to a number of problems that we're experiencing. There was also then the question around CETA. In fact, we are engaged in CETA at the moment. I can't remember who asked the question, but the issue is that CETA has had capacity problems for a long time as well. So as an agency, we're also getting consultants to do the work on their behalf. So that was part of the challenge. And they have done a big jigamajiga themselves, and they are looking at being the preferred service provider to government departments and to other government agencies and SOEs. And so we're in the process of engaging with them. In fact, CETA is assisting us with some of the processes in the Department of Labour, and they have been part of working with us on this contract, of assisting us in managing the contract for a long time now. So it's just a question of extending and asking CETA to extend this engagement that's going on with them. The issue around Mr. Manamela asked, Honourable Manamela asked about a handover report. We concluded what is called a closeout report in October, at the beginning of November, on this contract. So it is a comprehensive report that takes you from day one of the contract to where we are. The weather process is at the moment is that we agree with Siemens that it will be a report that they give input in. We also give our own input, and the report is with Treasury for final approval, and it will be shared with the parliamentary portfolio committee members. We'll make sure that it is there. I think the DG answered the question between EOH versus Accenture. I think the chairperson asked the question, what is the difference? We entered into a different contract with Accenture for a particular service, and if we are to ask Accenture to give us another type of service, would again have to go through supply chain processes and so on. And I would like to appeal to the parliamentary portfolio committee members that we are actually in ICU as a department. ICT is a critical component of service delivery for us. Without ICT, we can't do anything. We can't pay benefits. Can't send emails, we can't write policies, there's absolutely nothing that we can do. And because we have come out of a 10-year contract, as it were, without any kind of internal capacity, our appeal really is that because the processes take so long and by its very nature, ICT is a very complex environment to work in. We would like that, this is just from me as DG of Corporate Services, that you assist us in understanding that some of the processes might take longer than what we actually need, but it is a process that we have to handle very deftly and quite gently. So I think I will leave it at that. Those are the questions that is there another one?
Just to add one or two or 2 points. The comparative report, the global report, is currently circulating for final review, and it's going to be on its way to national treasury. I think that they also asked about the value for money with regard to EOH and the venture. I can assure you, Chair and the members of the committee, that we definitely are getting value for the work that is being done with the assistance of the providers that we are using. The other question that was asked by one of the honourable members was how long the contracts are going to be. The Accenture contract is planned to finish end of March this year, and the EOH is under discussion, but the contract it allows us up to the 30th of November, but that will be finalised. The intent for EOH is to assist us just with the transition. So as soon as we are ready with all our processes, we will then start the termination process of that.
That is by when for EOH?
We PricewaterhouseCoopers has made an undertaking that by the third week of February this month, they will then ask for RFPs. So it means that in about a month's time, we will have commenced the bid process for new suppliers.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I think I would like the committee to understand the criticality of the work that is being done by EOX. They are currently assisting us to keep all our operational and services. And in addition to that, they are also contributing to the work that we're doing at CF in terms of addressing the backlog. And the claims system that the commissioner was referring to, they are also assisting us with that. So there is we want to quickly conclude those activities while we are also appointing other service providers. So there is business critical systems that they are looking at. So at a worst case, the contract only allows us not to exceed November. But we want to plan and ensure that we finish that the web before preparation before end of November.
About UH and what is this cement that one member commented that it's Siemens coming back through the back door. Something like this. That is still the same thing as Siemens. Is that true? I really don't know that. I mean, you know. But somebody asked this question. I don't think it was answered very well.
When Siemens Limited asked CIS, who were the providers of services to the Department of Labor from, I think, around 5 years ago, that they would like to feed the Siemens Limited contract to them, because Siemens had gone out of the IT game, we were their only, were their last remaining, account, if you like. So they ceded the contract to, CIS. Siemens Information System, CIS, SA. IT services, Siemens IT services. So that company was then bought over by EOH, and hence, but the rights and the obligations of the contract still remained. And I think that was the critical part for us, that the obligations in the contract are still enforceable.
Talking to the machine, so we...
I'm sorry.
You have a closing remarks on this one.
Okay, no, thanks. There were two additional
questions.
Okay,
just before the guys here, I'm sorry. Can you... Yeah. Manamel and then Vandal.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Look, I think... Firstly, the comprehensive report, and I'm quite excited that it is being finalized and that we will have a sight of the report, and I think it will help us further understand what happened throughout and at the end of the project. Secondly, I'm not persuaded about why we ignored CETA. And I think it's more of a general statement. There's no concrete reasons given other than CETA does not have capacity. CETA also uses consultants. Unless the DG or DDG can say to us, we have said to CETA, this is what we need to do, and on the basis of that, then CETA said we're not able to do that. That's the second thing. And I think finally that the whole point of the distinction between EOH and Siemens is I think very important, not only for the AG but also for us, for us to for us to better understand what the issue is, whether it's a legal issue, whether it's a matter of fact as to what really happened. I think it's important for us to understand over and above yourselves in the department, understanding what the issue is. I think it's more important for you to explain to us to understand what the story is. And I think the sense we're getting is that there was a contract with Siemens. Siemens ceded that contract to CITS, which was then taken over by EOH, and therefore EOH is merely continuing with, as part of the exit strategy, is merely continuing with the terms of and conditions of the contract, as has always been the case. And I think our main worry is why, I mean, was an obligation to Pacino for an extra year with the same contract. If yes, what was the an insistence on the new terms and conditions for certain things to be met out of the 18 which were agreed to? And I think secondly, something that is more confusing is the role of Accenture. If there is an exit process that has been agreed to with EOH, what then becomes the role of Accenture? Because I don't think it's about saying, look, we've entered into an agreement, there's money spent, let's keep people accountable. You know, it's also about what investing resources wherein they would then be able to deliver for us fully, you know, and for the public out there. So in the as part of this exit year, the same problems which were there in the past, those problems are still persistent. You know, and I think that's our worry. We're investing more money, we invested money into Accenture, we continued with EOH. Yes, there's a new discussion and strategy, but we've put in money, but yes, there's no movement. There seems to be no change. I think that's the main concern, Tiju.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief, and thank you very much for those questions. I'll also be listening to the answers to those wonderful questions that Honourable Wanda Mayor has asked. May I just ask, is there truth in the rumours that the Minister is concerned about this EOH contract to the extent that she has even asked for this contract to be suspended? Thank you.
No, I don't think we should deal with rumours. This thing is not there now. No. Rumors. No, we can't be rumors.
No.
Yeah, if you say rumor, then I mean somebody can come with any other rumor. So please save us the rumors.
There's a rumor that rumor is not true.
Thank you. Chairperson, is it fact that the minister has asked for the contract to be suspended? Thank you.
No, thanks. I will attempt to deal with two issues. Look, the broader one is to say that we will continue to do our utmost best to ensure that moving into the future we have a redefined IT environment within the department. Now, I think we can debate the whole day long around the issue of, I don't know why there is confusion around, for instance, the role for Accenture around developing, was that developing a plan, exit and service transfer plan, the plan. The other one is developing a strategy to assist the department moving into the future. For me, I think that's pretty straightforward. And it's different from a situation where you and I are in a contractual arrangement for 10 years. But then in there, we agree to say, as and when this contract comes to an end, for services that have not been finished, finalized and whatever, we must create a period within which we are able to address some of those issues. In other words, it is only a party to the agreement that features into a termination support period. It can't be a party from outside the contractual arrangement. It is also about, now that we have come to the end of this thing, what is it that I now hand over to you, and in what form do I do so? I mean, that's the most basic kind of level. So you would not then ask a party such as Accenture or CETA for that matter and say, come and finish off that which should have been finished off by, let's say, Siemens, stroke EOH or something. It's really not going to work. That's the understanding of the termination support clause that we have in the main contract. Now, I think it's a different matter as to why it was done. That's the, you know, then the designers and the people who did put together the contract, perhaps they would shed some light around that. All we have a contract before us. It makes this particular provision. How do you use that particular provision for a work that has either been completed in sustenance of services or work that has not been completed and so forth. And so for me, that's the distinction between the two. For instance, maybe let me just on this point. I don't know. Maybe I may want to read the specific provision itself for your second point. When it says during the termination support period, the department or its nominee may request, and the contractor shall make available, and as part of the agreed price, as the term is defined in Annex 10 of the PPP, the services or those parts of the services that the department has requested and the contractor has agreed to continue to provide. So again, the point of reference is to the services provided that were ongoing under the agreement. Now, on the question of I like your lawyerish kind of handling it. It is fact that the minister has directed that we suspend the termination support agreement that we have with the OH. We are currently engaged in processes to deal with the question of containing the negative implications, for instance, of such a directive, and looking at ways and means of how what we have, whatever we have within the IT environment, does not have to collapse. So we have got to find a way of dealing with those things. So, is it fact? Yes, it is fact. Thank you, Chair.
You seem to be having an ear in that department or in the minister's office. Honorable Manama.
Thank you very much. I think that's quite a concern, the confirmation of that rumor. Because then it's my matter. That's why I'm saying the confirmation of that rumor, because then I think one may ask what are the reasons thereof. You know, because we cannot have a situation where, if it is the minister was asked that, it may be unfair to ask the DG and his team as to what the reasons thereof are, but I'm sure they may know what the reasons thereof. And if they do, if we can be told what those reasons are, and I agree with you, there are serious implications in terms of the immediate termination of this whole thing. In my view, if we have spent, well, if in the 5 years of this contract we realized there were going to be problems, I think that the process we're undertaking now with PricewaterhouseCoopers and everybody else should have actually been initiated a long time ago. You know, so that there should not have been, even in the first place, this extra, what, the termination and exit year. That option should have actually not even, arisen, but it's now water under the bridge. I think if we can get those reasons around why the minister has asked that this be terminated, firstly. And secondly, I think that there has to be, even if the people who are responsible for this mess have passed on or anything of the sort, I think that there has to be some form of investigation. We've got to go into the root of what's the problems were and all of that, because I think at some point in the past there were some indications that there may have been impropriety on the part of certain officials in the Department of Labor. If we are seen to be overlooking that, I think that we'll be doing great injustice. You know, let's look at possibly as we're doing with the compensation funds. Let's look at the possibility of a forensic audit or whatever that process that we can be engaged into that will not necessarily drain the energies of the current department administration from looking into the new strategy. There are a whole range of other things that we could do. We could ask the president to put in a special investigation unit to look into this particular deal. It is not vengeance. It is just that we're putting things into proper perspective and those who are responsible that we bring them to book. Thank you, Chairman.
What other rumors do you have?
You said you must stay away from rumors. I'll keep that to myself.
One rumor which is
another one. Just a response to the. I think, you know, I welcome the comments, for example, about 5 years ago, perhaps we could have done this and so forth. I think let's also take into account that in December 2010, that's about 4 or 5 months before I arrived, the Department of Labor tried to pull out of the TPP arrangement and commissioned a report by KPMG. Now, KPMG in that did I mention the wrong?
No. He's remembering now what
KPMG.
He's remembering.
Yeah, KPMG.
Is remembering a rumor.
KPMG came out with a report. Among many other things that it recommended strongly, and these are their words, they recommended strongly that the department should not go the route of a legal termination. And they stated the reasons why. And then suggested that amongst other things, the route was a negotiated settlement. And so on. So I would suspect that those of us that were there followed that particular recommendation and so on as put forward by KPMG. On the reasons, unfortunately, through you, Chair, I don't think I'm in the position to put across the state of business as to why the direct by the minister is such that we have got to suspend with immediate effect the work of EOH. I'm just in the position to do that.
Now that this rumor is now reality, what is the way forward? Because you see, we have to. What was OH doing in the compensation? That if the thing is stopped, how much do we tend to lose all of this? Because I'm trying to check, because I think people, consultants come in to close the gap. And how long will it take for you to get a replacement so that that job can continue being done? I'm just
trying to check. I am correct. Perhaps just one thing. I'm not sure whether you have that slide with the statistics and so on. Because if we had it, we would be hanging it up there and so on. We had a situation where the constipated point at the compensation fund is the huge backlog that we had there. Plus minus 2 million documents unprocessed and so on. we then said, under the context of the termination support service in terms of the termination support period in terms of the defined service in there. We then said they asked EOH through the, I think, an entity called MSO Medical Service Solutions or something to assist us with that particular backlog. And it's a serious backlog, and it's the same backlog that, in a sense, has led to this huge outcry about the service providers not being paid, and of course the medical practitioners refusing to do what they're supposed to do, and so on. Now, we engaged them, and I think they must have started, was it beginning of end or mid-December? Mid-December, yeah. But roughly in a period of about 4 to 5 weeks, that part of the backlog showed signs of being tended at the rate of about 47%, which wants to tell you that that's almost 50% of the problem. But the thing is that that was just a zoomed kind of area, because you must remember that once, for instance, if we had been in a position to flush out the backlog itself, EOH was not going to continue doing that kind of work. We were going to, you know, that's why I'm saying, amongst other things, the issues that are beginning to talk about around the turnaround, Jigamachi, needed to must ensure, amongst other things, that you don't have an accumulated backlog in the manner in which we have. So we're trying to relieve a particular complicated point. And therefore, as this stands, I think it's roughly estimated at about 47% or so. Now, the information that we wanted to display up there is because we wanted to show, to show as to how some of the service providers, for instance, we had to calculate how much it over what period and so forth, who were part of this problem developing. So, unfortunately, I think it's going to take long waiting to hook this thing up.
Let's put it this way. I'm messed up by the confirmation of this rumor.
Don't take it personal.
Maybe to your question, because you posed a question, right, on that question, you know, so what do we do now? May I just suggest that we give you a chance, because there are issues that we're engaging with also to deal with the, to ensure that we flow from a systemic point of view. I would respectfully request that we be given an opportunity to actually do that. Because there are serious problems have started cropping up also that we were trying to resolve at this stage around the chain.
I think we should close it, leave it here. We'll have to, engage with the minister just to check. Because I don't think we should have even listened to this rumor. But now that the rumor is no longer a rumor, we just need to confirm. Engage with the minister and just check what are the issues. And we will do that, and we need to do it. We need to speed that up so that we don't let a long time go. And this suspension means these people are not going to be able to do the processing of whether is it claims or what, or are they fixing your computer, medical claims. Yeah. Because there are people out there who need to receive their money, so that they can, improve their health, well-being. I'm closing the session, but I'm not closing the meeting. The meeting will continue, but the department, you'll be excused. There's a meeting. I'm not saying now. And I think by next week, Wednesday, the first batch of questions will be sent to the to yourself the written questions. We will explain what is the background, you know, what is the question and why is the question asked. So it will be quite a clear thing that we'll send to. We'll work on it starting from tomorrow, establishing a small institute. You want the announcement you want to make?
Just for the benefit of the members of the portfolio committee chair, we are publishing an errata on our annual performance plan as well as the strategy plan, and we have asked the tables and announcements here in Parliament to actually publish that kind of errata. But also there is going to be formal communication to members of the portfolio committee in this regard. Thanks.
Okay, sir, you are excused. Members, can you take a 5-minute break so that we will get that new basis?
I just want to do a quick registration with my department members, so I can just take down the contact details. Yeah. Just take it down now, Dr. Thierry. I'm going to be sitting here. No, go ahead, go ahead.
I think that person, what he has been, you know, family involved in
No, he will be there, but I just want to see what this whole thing was. have. And
Thank you.